B-Pod Studios.
Stay with us and we're going to show you how to take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
The importance of taking dead aim.
Welcome to Taking Dead Aim, a show dedicated to the game of golf and the people who play it in the Carolinas and around the world. Taking Dead Aim is a presentation of RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. And now, here's your host, a man who once described Caddyshack as an awesome documentary, Charlie Nance.
Hey, welcome back. Once again, we're Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter at CLT_golf guy. From this point forward, it's going to feel like the golf season is the front car of the roller coaster that's just crested the top of that big first hill. This week, the tour is in Orlando for the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Next week, the Players Championship. We're a month from Masters Week and less than 60 days out from the Wells Fargo Championship here at Quail Hollow Club. Speaking of which, this week, once again, Team Taking Dead Aim defending our Media Challenge Championship on the Green Mile at Quail, and also had the chance to spend some time with defending champion and professional Twitter chirper Max Homa. He's a great guy. Additionally, we spoke with tournament director Gary Soba about where we are now and what's new for the tourney this year. You will hear both of those conversations. Also this week, we catch up with Andrew DiBattista, the head men's golf coach of the 14th ranked University of North Carolina Tar Heels. See where his team is as they get ready for that critical stretch leading to conference and the NCAAs. But we begin today down at Bay Hill for the Arnold Palmer Invitational and our boots on the ground from the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, Ron Green Jr. Well, Ron, before we start talking about Bay Hill, I want to look back at the last 3 weeks on tour, and I guess really we could go back four, although Pebble, it was more about the weather. But you go from Pebble to L.A. to Mexico to the Honda, and what all three of those courses have in common in all three of those tournaments is the winning scores. No one was complaining about how the pros and equipment and technology were ripping up the world. I hate to keep harping on this, but I can't wrap my head around that there's really that much of a problem with the distance, especially with the rank and file. If the best in the world, the best they can do is 6 under par for a weekend at a PGA Tour event.
Yeah, obviously it depends on where you are and what the weather conditions are. I think you pick those, you're right. But I did a thing, I checked, and I think the average winning score on tour this year is something like 14 or 15 under par when you add them all together, which is fine.
That's fine.
They're the best players in the world. They should do that. Now, as an aside, and I can't name the course because I wasn't told exactly which one, but I know that I was told the PGA Tour is negotiating with a course to host a FedEx Cup playoff event in the next year or so. And the course is very excited about it, but they were told to do so. They had to build 14 new tees to accommodate the players.
Wow.
So, so that means everything but the par threes, I guess. So so there is that. But, you know, I mean, you get here at Bay Hill and you just get a hard golf course, you get a little wind blowing, and suddenly how far you hit it doesn't become as important as how straight you hit it, as various people, Phil Mickelson included, could tell you. You don't want to hit it in the wrong spots at Bay Hill where the rough is really thick and all that. So, and I think, you know, the Players coming up, I think it's a golf course that gives you a little bit of everything. If it's calm and, you know, the weather conditions, well, they'll shoot a low score there, but it's not overly long. And it has the great pedigree of there's no rhyme or reason to the kind of player who wins there. So it goes back to the argument a lot of people have made that it's not so much about the distance or not entirely distance, but it's about design and if you want to call it cleverness or whatever that makes a golf course challenging. And I think we all like to see the best players win there on a good golf course where it's just not, you know, fire away and see who can get to 26 under par first. Those weeks are fine once in a while.
You know, thanks for bringing that up, because you're at a place that I've gone back and forth with over the years. I remember watching Bay Hill, and there have been years, and you know, I'm going back 20 years now at this point, where it seemed like it might as well have been played out in Palm Springs with as many birdies as were going on. But it's almost as if when Arnie used to tinker with it constantly, it was his pet project, his working workshop, and it almost seems that right before he passed, and I don't know how much work they've done on it since he passed, but he may have gotten it absolutely right, because I see the best players in the world, and you know, I'm one of these people, I look at Adam Scott swing a golf club, and I wonder how the ball ever has the audacity to not go where it's supposed to. And in round one, for example, that course chewed him up. He got in the rough and was hitting it in the water, and he got out of position, and he was putting it to the wrong sides of greens. And I thought to myself, here's one of the best guys with the best swings ever, and this course is absolutely bedeviling to him.
Yeah, and then, I mean, after the first round, the wind changed, and the wind picked up and made it difficult. I mean, now Matt Every is maybe not every man on the tour, but he goes from shooting 65 on Thursday, acting like he can do no wrong, to I think they had to go send a search party out for him by the time he made the turn on Friday, when he got it going sideways. And of course, it'll just swallow you up. I mean, it's there's the line can be really thin at this place, because it's big, it's hard. It's in many ways it's a classic sort of Florida golf course. But yeah, Arnie made it difficult. He made the greens a little more severe. They're not super crazy like, you know, Augusta's greens with all that, but it's a hard golf course. It asks, you know, demanding questions, and I think it's 13 of the top 25 players in the world are here, but some of them just look at it and say, you know, that's not my kind of place. I think it's a great place for somebody like Rory McIlroy, but then again, what golf course?
Yeah, please. Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim. You just bring up that this week at the Bay Hill Invitational, there's 13 out of the top 25 players in the world. We're seeing a lot of jostling the last 2 years as the players adjust to the compressed schedule, and especially this year with the Olympics. But I've always had a concern about this event. And my touchstone is what happened to the Byron Nelson golf tournament in Dallas, where it was everybody went and played the Byron Nelson. It always had a stellar field every summer. And then once Byron passed away, it just seemed like each year less and less and less of the top players showed up. And now, I mean, for crying out loud, they can't figure out what venue they're playing at from week to week. And we're at 13 of the top 25. And this used to be an event where you may have had 20 of the top 25. Is it a case of just the schedule and the players adjusting, or is this tournament losing its cachet gradually because even though Arnold's name is still on it, Arnold is not there?
I think there may be a little bit of the latter there, but I think it's the schedule, the compressed schedule. I mean, look at Honda last week. I mean, that's one that at times has had great fields and had one of the top 10 in it. I think it's getting – I remember talking to Kim Huffman a few years back at Wells Fargo, and he was talking about, man, the days when we could get 18 of the top 25, he goes, it's gone. It's just different now. The players don't do their schedules that way. You're not going to get them all. You get pretty much all of them at the Players Championship, but in the majors. But otherwise, it's just it's a hard puzzle to fix. And you look at the Byron Nelson. I mean, I think that one has struggled for two huge reasons. I mean, the place on the schedule between the big events that fall where it falls now, the fact that they can't find a place players like. I mean, they're going to go back to Las Colinas, and that may be where they have to stay, but they moved there because they didn't like that. And venue is a huge part of what gets players to play. I mean, look at Riviera. That they flock to Riviera. They don't flock to Pebble Beach as much as people like it because of the format, and some guys don't love going to Mexico. They don't love the golf course down there. It's, you know, some of it's personal preference. It's a hard, you know, it's trying to put a bunch of pieces together, and sometimes you end up with a couple blank spots. You know, so we relish weeks like next week at the Players when everybody will be there on a golf course that's built for theater.
Yeah, and it's a golf course that anyone can compete on, whether it be, you know, someone who is a bomber or someone who's calculating around the golf course. I think it's one of the things they like about Riviera as well, is that it's also that same kind of golf course. As the players in the locker room and out on the practice tees, you hear them speak of Bay Hill. What are their impressions of that golf course? Is it a golf course that is more universally liked than disliked?
I think the guys who come here and play it like it, but I think the guys who really don't like it, they take a week off. I think that's sort of the way this one is. It'll be interesting. I think I'll get all my weeks messed up, but the schedule changes a little next year because they're starting a week later. So the Florida Swing will only be three events instead of four. Pretty sure they'll play Honda, Players, Bay Hill after Bay Hill. And I think that would be a real test. Valspar, I think, is the one, or maybe it's not one of those. One of them's moving to later in the year just to accommodate the different calendar. So, yeah, I think it'll be a big test next year. If guys have come off the Players' Championship, you know, they'll be looking toward Augusta. There'll be a match play in there. And you might see some slippage next year. But then you've got a guy like Rory who, once he decided to add it to his schedule and got to know Mr. Palmer and spent some time and came to appreciate more, you know, I feel like he sort of puts this one down in ink when he's rather than pencil when he's doing his his early season schedule. And I think you're going to have some guys who, out of respect and out of just liking the golf course, will be here, but not all of them.
Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim. I can remember in the not too distant past when every week was, well, is Tiger here or not? And I think we're just becoming accustomed to the new paradigm of Tiger Woods, or maybe we're changing in a new direction in that it was big news, I guess, the day that he said, okay, I'm not coming to Bay Hill this year. But more and more when he doesn't show up, we sort of seem to be accepting, okay, the back's not feeling good, and the focus becomes more on who's there rather than who isn't there. Is that just my imagination from afar, or do you get that vibe in the press room as well?
I think I get that. I've said for years that while tournaments love to get all the stars they can get, and it just adds to the flavor and the color and the fun of a tournament, once Thursday gets there and they start playing, you kind of forget who's not there and you start paying attention who is there and who's on the leaderboard. I think that's just the way the narrative and the attention goes. You know, when Tiger's not here, he's won 8 times and you notice it. You notice it. You know, you notice John Rahm's not here too, but you know, what is he, number 2 in the world? And so you just sort of move on. But yeah, I think Tiger is a week-to-week thing and will remain a week-to-week question for the remainder of his career. I mean, what is he, 44? And, you know, and he, you know, admits that the back's a little stiff, or at least Mark Steinberg said that for Bay Hill. And I think as we look forward to the rest of the season, you know, we'll be able to sort of speculate on where he's going to go. But I don't know if most weeks we imagine Tiger's going to play, we're going to have to wait till that Friday afternoon to be sure. Because, I mean, like Bay Hill, you kind of thought it was happening, then all of a sudden it wasn't. And you know, it was a bigger surprise that he didn't play than he did. But as we all are day to day, I think with Tiger, it's very much that way in terms of what his playing schedule is going to be moving forward.
Get you out of here on this. Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer is our guest taking Dead Aim. Just looking at some of the players, I mean, we're a month out from Masters Week. And, you know, people really starting to wind up and start to work towards that week. How hurt really is Brooks Koepka, or is he on the other side of being hurt and it's just taking him longer to recover because he just doesn't look like Brooks Koepka on the golf course?
Well, I think he's like a lot of people. I think he sort of gets fueled by confidence, and he hasn't had any results. He insists he's fine physically, hitting the golf ball, you know, dealing with the knee issue. It's walking down hills, he said, that he feels it and may feel it for forever. But golf-wise, he said, has no effect on him. And, you know, he's just not been sharp. I think my sense is he feels like he's working toward it. He's gaining on it, but he's not making a whole lot of putts. And probably as a result of not hitting it quite as close to the hole as he has. Long-term, I'm not concerned about it. But, you know, I mean, we sort of live in a short-term world, too, where you want to see, you know, you want to see some results, and he wants to see some results, and he has, by virtue of what he's done in the past, we have such high expectations for him that when you see him sort of be just another name on the list right now, you sort of wonder what's going on. I think it's still very young for him in this season. I think we could, once we get through the PGA Championship in May, if nothing has changed, then you really start to wonder.
From the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, that's Ron Green Jr. And when we return, Andrew DiBattista, head men's golf coach at the University of North Carolina, takes Dead Aim at his 14th-ranked Tar Heels, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
We are Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Andrew DiBattista is the head men's golf coach of the University of North Carolina Tar Heels, currently ranked 14th in the country, and we had the chance to catch up this week. Coach, looking over some of the rankings, I see you guys currently as high as 14. It occurred to me, I've been talking to you and Coach Sapp, who was in the chair before you, a long time now, and I can remember a time when NC being ranked and going to the NCAAs, this was not a given, and now it's just a regular and constant occurrence. And a conference as tough as the ACC is, what were the challenges? What's been your plan to build this program or to rebuild the program as you've done? Because it's really been quite remarkable in a relatively quick time.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the foundation has always been here. Historically, this program has had tons and tons of success. And then if you take that a step further and you look at the University of North Carolina and the athletic teams and programs here, it's remarkable. So I guess the easiest way to put it is when I had my end-of-year evaluation and we were, you know, myself and Bubba Cunningham, we were talking, the goal for this program is to simply be in the same breath as all of the other sports at Carolina and to be recognized. When people think about Carolina athletics, we want them to think about Carolina golf. I mean, right now, obviously, you think about Carolina basketball, you think about our women's soccer program. I'd say currently you're thinking about football because of all of the energy they have going on. And then you look at the sports that are competing right now, and women's tennis is ranked number one. I think men's tennis is ranked number two. Women's lacrosse is number one. Men's lacrosse is in the top five. Wrestling's in the top eight. You know, so when you look at your closest peers, that is where we want to be. I think the biggest thing that we're working on right now is just our consistency. And I think we recently had a team meeting and we just talked about the approach to that has to be the focus on ourselves. So let's not get caught up in the rankings and, like, yes, this is a result-oriented business and a result-oriented game, but let's truly get back in on focusing on us, which is what we do every single day, how we go about our business, our confidence, our commitment, and really what you're talking about is our culture.
Andrew DiBattista is the head men's golf coach at the University of North Carolina. He's our guest taking Dead Aim. Thank you for bringing up consistency. We'll get to that a little bit later on. You know, you often hear of teams mimicking their coaches, and I know you to be one of the most competitive, fiery people I've ever met. I mean, you'd cut somebody's heart out playing Connect Four. So there's no way you can have a whole team like that, though, right? Or do you? What I guess I'm asking is, what sort of tangible Andrew DiBattista traits do you see in your team?
We're getting there. Yes, you are right. I'm a competitor. I hate to lose. I hate it. It drives me insane. But sometimes the guys ask me, you know, how I have so much patience. So maybe I'm not showing that, at least in a negative way, but my wife would disagree. She says I have no patience. But anyways, we're getting there. A lot of that is in the recruiting process, right? And you're able to go out and you're able to build relationships and identify young people that kind of fit that. And then a lot of it, like I kind of mentioned, is our culture and what we create every single day. And I think you know this about our practices, but our practices do not consist of, hey, let's stand on the range and beat a bunch of range balls today. Our practices consist of competition, and sometimes there's rewards, sometimes there's consequences, but it's always about competition and it's always about pressure because the one thing that is very, very, very difficult in our sport to recreate in practice is the pressure and the situations and the nervousness that you feel in the middle of a golf tournament. Standing on the range, shooting a 7-iron is very different than what you experience in the middle of round two or round three or whatever the case may be. So we talk about it on a very regular basis, just being very competitive and And I very much like where we are as a team and program.
Yeah, I've always said, I don't care what line of work you're in, what business you're in, whether it be sports or anything. I like to surround myself with people who hate to lose more than they love to win, because winning's easy. If you can surround your people who absolutely hate to lose, I think you're going to be successful more times than not. Let's look back at the fall for a sec. All in all, pretty solid. Five events, a win, couple of top fours, never anything worse than seventh. I'm not going to use the satisfied word because I know better than that with you. But let's just say there was no cause for panic after the first semester, yes?
Yeah, I mean, it was, I'm laughing because you know me. It was okay. I mean, yeah, we did some really nice things. We started the year up in New York. And honestly, on a pretty challenging golf course, in some pretty challenging conditions. The final round was pretty brutal, tons of rain, a good amount of wind, and that's really where our guys kind of excelled and kicked it into high gear. So we blew out a field that it wasn't the strongest field that we'll see all year, but certainly off to a good start. And then after that, you go back to that consistency word. And we certainly had some very good finishes, and then we had some finishes that did not make us very happy. Like, we were very poor at Duke. That was a bad start in round one, and we dug ourselves such a big hole you couldn't really get out of it. Olympia Fields was a very good tournament for us. Now, that is a extremely deep and talented field, and I thought we did a nice job there. And then we went to Notre Dame, plenty of good things there. And then Golf Club of Georgia, I mean, the best team in the country, just like Olympia Fields. And if I remember right, I think we finished in seventh place, but the entire tournament was so tight in terms of the scoring. I want to say it was almost like from first place to like 10th place was only separated by like 11 shots or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's the same message. It's, let's look at the things that we did good and let's learn from them. Let's look at the areas where we can get better and let's learn from it. And just keep grinding.
Yeah, I don't think people realize how scoring works and the great leaps that can happen in scoring in a college golf match, how you can have enormous swings in just a couple of holes. I don't know how you keep from not having ulcers your whole life. In terms of consistency, back to that word for a second, Ryan Burnett had to hate to get off the course in the fall. I have him three top threes and a win. Currently, I've got him at 22 under overall for the year and a scoring average that's approaching 69. Anytime you start to see that, you just kind of get out of their way.
Yes. Yep. He was stellar in the fall, really turned it on. And he's really talented, just really, really talented. Ball striking is superb. I'd put his ball striking, especially his driving, up against anybody in the country. And as you know, if you can get the ball in the fairway, he's not a bomber, not like 330, but he gets it out there plenty of distance. I mean, probably, 290 to 300. You can play golf from the center of the fairway that far out. And his putter historically has been streaky, and give him credit because it's an area of his game that he's working on to become more consistent. But when the putter is hot, he can do things like he did up in New York to start the year, which is, I think it was like 18 under par, set the course record, and won by, I believe it was like seven shots.
Yeah, he ran away. He ran away and hid from the field.
Yeah, so those are things that he is capable of. And just like the overall message to all of us here, the message to him is, let's see it on a consistent basis, and let's really get into that kind of upper echelon of college golf. And he's been working hard at that. So you give him credit for getting better and kind of working towards continuing to get better to improve.
Andrew DiBattista is the head men's golf coach of the University of North Carolina. He's our guest taking Dead Aim. Burnett's clearly the playing leader on this team, but you've also gotten some solid performances, albeit, to use that word again, a little less consistently from both Ryan Gerard and Austin Greaser, both of which have second-place finishes so far this year.
Yeah, Gerard's been great. I just said his name, I get chills thinking about him because he's grown so much as a human being. In the time that he's been here, he's become such a good teammate, such a good person, such a good leader for us. And then I just, I feel, you know this, I believe that if you have all things in order off the course, it's not going to guarantee you success on the course, but it's certainly going to give you a better chance to be successful. He falls in that category, and I spent some time around him in Hawaii, where we just got back from, whatever that was, a week and a half ago, where he was in contention, had a chance to win. You know, guy holds out on the 18th hole. We literally watched it. Guy holds out from the left rough. You know, but he was fantastic, and his short game and his brain is what is going to keep him in every single tournament and every single round. Short game just has unbelievable touch, excellent creativity, and just a whole lot of grit and determination. And he's really smart, just has a high golf IQ. And that's one of the parts that's probably grown, you know, a lot in the last two-ish years. He doesn't try to force things. He kind of takes what the golf course gives him. If he's in trouble, he has enough confidence in himself to say, like, I don't need to hit the hero shot right here. Like, I can chip it out sideways, and I can still wedge it to 8 feet or whatever it is and get up and down that way, which he did in Hawaii to kind of keep his second round going, which, again, just a lot of credit to him.
I'm so glad you brought up off the course, because I had this to ask you. You know, this game's tough. Even if you have nothing to do other than practice, it's tough to get that consistency that we all want. And I know you guys do your very best to manage schedules and whatnot, but, you know, North Carolina is not a charm school by any stretch of the imagination. And it's very conceivable to me that if you have a tough class or a tough course load for a semester, it can really have an adverse effect on your game, if nothing else, just from a mentally draining standpoint.
Yep. Yep, especially, like you said, at a place like here where the academics are pretty tough. So we, meaning myself, Coach Clark, and even Scott Grant, who's now with us, we believe in balance. So we're preaching to that to the guys all the time. Like, yes, you're here to play golf at the highest level and be a student at the highest level, but we know that you're in college, right? And we don't want you to just suffocate yourself with academics and golf at all times. So, like, do some of the things that bring joy to your life. So if that's playing tennis or playing racquetball or reading a book or hanging out with friends or going to a movie, like, let's make sure that you have some of those, you have opportunity in your life to go do some of those things. And we talk a lot here about just being efficient. Like, everybody kind of gets into this thing of, you know, hey, you need to practice for 8 hours a day to be good at this sport. Maybe, I mean, right? Maybe that's, for some people, that's the way that they need to do it. You know, but if in this moment, in this stage of your life, you have all of these things to juggle, like if you're going to be at the facility for 2 hours or 2.5 hours or 4 hours, like whatever it is, let's be fully engaged and locked in, and let's make sure that every minute you're here is productive and beneficial. So then that frees you up to have more time to go study or hang out with friends or go see a movie or stop by a professor's office hours to say hello. So yeah, it's a big thing we believe in is finding that balance so they can have success in all areas of their life.
Let's talk about the spring a little bit. You come out with a solid fourth out of 14, good field down at Ponte Vedra at Seabest. But then sort of an oddity in terms of your success, an 11th when you were out in Hawaii. Did y'all run into some wild wind in the islands or what?
We just ran into not being at our best. Was it windy? Yes, but we went out. The practice round was just as windy. There were no surprises. It's just one of those, and I know people don't like to hear this, but sometimes in golf it happens. And when you got five guys, and you know, you hope that they don't all have an average day or a bad day on the same day, but the reality is sometimes that happens. And that's what happened in round one, and we were better in round two, and we were even better in round three. But when you dig yourself that big of a hole with whatever 20 or 21 teams, you know, it's hard to climb up the leaderboard as far as you want to. And same thing, you talk about every shot counts and the strokes here and strokes there and saving this one or picking one up here. I'm pretty sure that we finished in 11th, but I think we're only like three or four shots from fifth place, you know, and
yeah,
a couple more putts drop or maybe this wedge shot goes a little bit closer. You get back on the plane coming home and sure, there's, you know, a sour taste in your mouth, but not like the one that we had. But like I said, a lot of good conversations since we've been back. This game can kind of, it can beat you down at times. So you try to stay level-headed and see what is reality, where can we get better, and then you just go work on it.
Get you out of here on this. Coach Andrew DiBattista is the head men's golf coach at the University of North Carolina. Our guest taking Dead Aim as we're talking today. As of right now, you're getting ready to head out to San Diego, and then you're home in the Tar Heel State for the remainder of the season. That being said, I always love to get wind of the golf boondoggles that you guys are fortunate enough to take advantage of from time to time. I'll pick up little things on Twitter and go, oh, you're kidding me. Where have the kids gotten to tee it up that they will have no real appreciation for until they're old men like us?
The most recent one was we actually took the entire team down to Seminole.
Oh, dear God.
We did that in the, I believe it was the third week of January.
Just to walk in the men's locker room at Seminole and see what's on the wall, I get chills just thinking about it.
Yeah, no, we're pretty fortunate. It's something that we believe in big time is the experience piece. And the first component of that is the relationships that we build with them and just taking care of our guys as human beings. But then if you're at a place like North Carolina and you have the support in the Carolina family that we have, those people who are amazing can help us do some pretty special things for our program and for our guys. So fortunate to go down to Seminole, and it was pretty cool because we were thinking about it, talking about it, but in just the last 2.5 years, I mean, it's a pretty sporty list. We've done Cypress Point, we've done Pine Valley, we've done Cherokee Plantation, we've done Medina, we've done Elotion, obviously Seminole. Quail Hollow, shoot, we've done Quail Hollow a bunch. So it's pretty amazing. And the guys appreciate it. I think they understand. And they'll definitely understand even more, whether it's in 5 years or 15 years or whatever the case is. But it's been pretty awesome.
His enthusiasm is infectious. He's one of my favorite people in the college game for sure. Head men's golf coach of the University of North Carolina Tar Heels, Andrew DiBattista. And up next, we take Dead Aim at the upcoming Wells Fargo Championship with tournament director Gary Soba and defending champion and professional Twitter chirper Max Homa, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
We're taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Time for a Wells Fargo Championship double shot. This past Monday was media day at Quail Hollow. Team Taking Dead Aim defended our Green Mile Challenge Championship. Sorry, had to get in the humble brag. Tournament director Gary Soba and defending champion Max Homa were both kind enough to give us a few minutes. Well, Gary, I always like to begin with this question. Where are we now? We're just a couple of months out from the Wells Fargo Championship.
Gosh, yeah, we just have over 50 days before the tournament. We're really excited. The build has started, and, the excitement's starting to build. We're getting commitments. We're about to go through the exemption process, but I think it's going to set up to be the best Wells Fargo Championship in history.
I was out there for Media Day earlier this week, and hats off to Johnny Harris and all of his team out at Quail Hollow Club, and all of us who play golf in the area are very, very jealous of his maintenance budget, because all of a sudden it was as green and emerald green as the land of Oz, whereas the rest of us are playing on brown mud everywhere. Just Quail already looks spectacular. Like you say, we still have 2 months to go.
Well, courses are always in good shape. Keith Wood, who handles the grounds, is fantastic. And you're right, it looks terrific this time of year, and will look even better the first week of May. So we're really excited. We've got a lot of new things this year. First and foremost, I want to start talking about pricing. Historically, children 12 and under have gotten in free. We have elevated that now. 17 and under with parents are going to be admitted free, so 17 and under. So we're trying to grow the game of golf, and we think that's a great way to do it. And then one other thing, we've listened to our patron surveys, and we've lowered certain concession prices. Beer is going to be $5. Mick Ultra is $5, and we've lowered other prices. So we want the fan experience to be tremendous out here, and we've got a lot of other things too.
That is fantastic. And speaking of beer, once again, I know last year we started to see more of this, but the craft beers that were out there on display, and there's actually going to be a craft beer festival this year.
There is. for the entire week, we've developed a craft beer zone near 13 Green. But on Friday and Saturday afternoon, we have 9 different breweries, local breweries. Each are going to serve 2 beers each. They're going to have 18 different craft beers. They can come out. It's going to be from 3 to 6 on Friday or 3 to 6 on Saturday. And we think it's going to be in a great area down in our QC Village that's really going to augment and provide kind of a fun fest party for the tournament.
Last year, I think, was the first year, or maybe it was the second year, of having Women's Day at the Wells Fargo Championship. And that was on Tuesday. It was a highlight of my life to get to meet Nancy Lopez last year. And this year, you've got Dowd and Webb Simpson, as well as Stephanie Rivera.
We do. Stephanie is the host the event, or the hostess of the event. She does a wonderful job kind of emceeing, and then in the afternoon the program will be Webb and Dowd Simpson. And we'll also have a clinic there that all the ladies will be able to go out to and practice their short game. So the Women's Day last year was unbelievably successful, and we're going to try to make that better this year.
Webb and Dowd, are you having to send them a car, or are they actually able just to walk from their house to the clubhouse this year?
They have a long commute, don't they? I think they know how to get there.
Gary Sub is the tournament director of the Wells Fargo Championship, our guest taking Dead Aim. Other new things this year, a celebrity putting challenge. Explain to me how this works.
On Tuesday, we've got a new practice screen, and we're going to bring out 20 or 25 celebrities, whether they're sports celebrities or political or government or media types. We're going to come out, and they'll putt for 6 holes, and the lowest score will win $10,000 for their favorite charity. And then we will take the winner and Mr. Harris down to 2 Green, which is right beside the practice green, and they will try to make an extended putt and turn that $10,000 into a $100,000 jackpot for their local charity.
That sounds great. You mentioned the new practice area. It's really neat, and I think it'll actually add to the fan experience when you're watching the guys on the driving range. It almost looks like a mini golf course out there. It's really spectacular.
Well, you come in, you come right into the range, and it's, as you mentioned, it's been completely remodeled, renovated with a new learning center, and it's very dynamic, and we're going to have the merchandise tent right there. So when people come right onto the golf course, I mean, they're going to watch all the players, be able to watch them hit. We're going to have an expanded concessions area there. So right when they come on the course, they've got a great view of golf, and then they'll see some of the changes. And then, Charlie, one of the other changes we've made behind the clubhouse, the old event lawn was tired. It was 17 years old. We've totally remodeled, renovated that. Think of sun sails, a massive tent, panoramic walls. So the people that have access to the event lawn and the Champions Club, boy, they are going to be in store for a real treat there behind the clubhouse.
Also, we've expanded the Green Mile Club this year, that whole concession area there by 16 and 17. Much to the players' joy, it has eliminated the back tee box on 17. I know Max Homa was doing backflips at the thought of that the other day, not having to make that shot on Saturday and Sunday. Big extended area, more fan experience up there.
You're right. I've had several players say my stress level just dropped knowing they don't have to try to cut a 4-iron from 225 yards. I know Jason Day hit a 7-iron, but we are going to move the Green Mile Club 30 yards closer to 17 Green. That does cannibalize the back tee, which, as we've talked about, the players are going to enjoy that. And then last year we added an awning there, and we added a secondary location. I call it Sun of Green Mile on 8T, and we're going to expand that location, add premium restrooms. And that's going to be 1,600 square feet. And I was shocked last year how many of the Green Mile members also went over and watched 7 and 8 during the course of play.
As far as the fan experience and the watching experience, I know we added a scoreboard in the middle of the water last year between, you know, sort of there by 16 Green and in the water areas you get towards, you know, 17T or 17 Green. There was a great huge scoreboard and video board that you could watch whatever was going on CBS or the Golf Channel or whatever at the time. I thought that was great. Has there been anything added to enhance the fan viewing experience this year?
We've done several things. One, we've increased the size of our grandstands. We have public seating on 5. We've doubled that on 17. We have a William Hill Winery opened to the public, and we've added much more seating and standing room in there. We've added new grandstand on 15, and we're looking at a couple other holes. So from the fans' perspective, you know, we want to make sure they have a wonderful experience out here. So, you know, lower prices for the children, free as a matter of fact, cheaper concessions, more places to view and sit and watch. So we've tried to be very responsive to our surveys, and I think we've done that.
Gary Sub is the tournament director of the Wells Fargo Championship, our guest taking Dead Aim. I know that next week you're hopping on a plane for Austin to head down. I imagine it's a recruiting visit, but you also always talk about how you're always looking for new things that other tournaments are doing as you're down for the match play at the WGC. How much of what has been added this year is sort of trial balloon floating for the President's Cup that'll be here in 2021 as far as setups and hospitality and things like that? Or is that not a concern?
It's a good question, a fair question. I don't know there's a lot of that, although I do believe they're going to use our entrance, and Mr. Harris is building a new entrance here to Quail Hollow, so I think the entrance is going to be different than they had during the PGA, and it's probably going to mirror what the Wells Fargo Championship has done. You know, one of the things we try to be really, you know, have a great parking system and transportation system for our fans. Uber last year, we had 16,000 Uber riders, and it's amazing how many people, you know, how convenient that is to come out here. So we've tried to tweak that. We've added a more convenient location Monday through Wednesday. Our patrons can go to the Calvary Church rather than down Carowinds, so they can park more nearby before they're transported in buses. So, again, trying to be more fan-friendly, and I don't know how much of that then will resonate with the President's Cup, but we certainly are very comprehensive in terms of our look at how we can provide a better experience for the fans.
Get you out of here on this. I know you can't really talk about some people that you're still are talking to about commitments, but talk about some people that have already said, you know, good Lord willing and creek don't rise, you can go ahead and ink me in. Who's coming?
Well, that's a really good question. I think we're going to have a loaded field, one of the best in recent history. We announced this past week U.S. Open champion, number 17 in the world, Gary Woodland. Xander Schauffele, who's now number 12 in the world, who historically has been in the top 10. Bubba Watson announced he's coming. He has not been here to the past two tournaments. And I can tell you we have verbal commitments from a lot of others that once we can commit those, we will announce those publicly. So I think the fans in Charlotte are going to see the greatest golfers in the world in an event that last year the players chose as the Players' Choice Award, which is their favorite event on the tour. So I think it's going to be just a bang-up field that we're excited about the first week of May.
Yeah, I still maintain I like your spot on the calendar. I think last year everyone was trying to feel out how best to adjust their schedules for the condensed scheduling. And, you know, some players, I think, learned the hard way that you really do need to play a little bit more. And for some players, you need to play, period, between the Masters and the PGA. And with you being, what, 2 weeks prior to the PGA and 3 weeks out from the Masters, I mean, it's a perfect, perfect spot on the calendar.
I agree with you. I think when we looked at last year, especially the guys that don't play every week, you know, Masters, then they take 2 weeks off, play in Charlotte, take a week off, and then prepare for the PGA, which I believe this year is at Harding Park. I may be incorrect about that.
No, it's not in San Francisco, at Harding Park.
Yes, it's at Harding Park. So I'm in agreement with you. I think the weather's perfect that time of year, and I think we have a nice slot in the schedule.
That's the tournament director of the Wells Fargo Championship, Gary Soba, one person who will be in the field for sure. Defending champion, professional Twitter chirper, Max Homa. I had the chance to spend some time with him this week at Media Day.
So you win the Wells Fargo Championship. It's your first win on the PGA Tour. Outside of the next morning or the next night, I don't know when the money wire transfer comes in. What is the moment where you wake up and go, wow, my life is really different? What was that moment?
That's a great question. I'm not sure if there was a defining moment. The next morning, just the flood of messages and getting to play the PGA Championship a week and a half later.
Because you weren't in that at that point.
I wasn't in it at that point. Tiger Woods coming over to me at the memorial to tell me congrats. I think all those things kind of add up, and you start to really feel like, man, like I did something pretty special.
Well, and one thing that comes along with it, and I'm one of these people that believes every American boy who plays golf has one of two dreams. They're either putting to win the U.S. Open on the putting green, or they're putting to win the Masters. And when you win a tournament on the PGA Tour, it means a date at Augusta that following spring.
Yep.
You knew it was coming in the mail. Was it Christmas Eve, the day after Christmas? When did you go to the mailbox and see that envelope that everybody dreams about?
I was in Kapalua for the Tournament of Champions, so it was probably January 2nd or so, and I saw a couple of my buddies who had won get their invitation in the mail, so I knew mine was sitting at home, and I couldn't wait to get back and go get it. So it was exciting. It was the first time I've ever gone home, and the first thing I've done is gone to the mailbox. I usually go to the couch a little bit quicker than that. that.
Is it one of those things that you find yourself, at least for the first week or so, waking up and going into the other room and just looking at it just to make sure it's real?
I've looked at it a few times, yeah. I definitely have to pinch myself about it. It's odd. As you get older, the Masters, like you said, when you're a young kid, you're thinking about
Was that it for
putt.
You? Was it the
yeah,
Masters?
Yeah, I think everybody had that. It was that. It was the U.S. Open. It was for me, it was the L.A. Open. But it feels like, oh, yeah, of course, I'm going to become a professional and play in the Masters. And you get older and you realize how hard it is to get into that event. So it is the biggest pinch me moment for sure. That's going to be one heck of a week.
Max Homa is our guest taking Dead Aim. You mentioned L.A. Thanks for doing that. Riviera, year in, year out, has not only a great field, but it's a great golf course. And it's a golf course that, with very little cosmetic changes, has withstood the test of time. It's 7,200 yards, which for you guys is not the longest thing you're going to run into. What is it about Riviera that makes it so great? And what is it in this era of controversy, an era of should we bifurcate or whatnot, what is it that the rest of the tour stops can take from a Riviera and apply to avoid a big mess that we're heading towards?
Riviera is... I think it's benefited by the fact that it has Kikuyu fairways. You can't really bounce the ball up to the front pins, and the greens tend to be quite firm. They're also subtle, and they're difficult to putt. The distance, I think, is a bit overblown in the sense that you're right by the water, although you can't see it. So the ball doesn't go particularly far. It has a nice, heavy ocean breeze, but... Yeah, it's just a golf course that's demanding in every facet of the game. You need to really control the flight of your golf ball, the height, both low and high. Like I said, the Kikuyu front parts of the greens makes it very demanding, because if it's a front pin, you need to land that thing 1 yard on, or else it's going to stop short of the green. So, I'm not an architectural junkie. I'm not sure, but they really make you work the ball left and right. They give you options off the tee, especially on the front nine, and they kind of tell you exactly where you need to hit it, and you better be able to, stand up to that test.
Now, I realize you're the defending champion at the Wells Fargo Championship at Quail Hollow Club, so your answer may be biased here. But let's be honest. There's a delineation in terms of championships that you can win on tour. This one is fairly prestigious, is it not?
It is. It's cool to win at a golf course that's had so many great past champions. Obviously, the golf course itself is very difficult and demanding, so I feel like if you can win out here, you can hang your hat on that, your golf game, at least for a week, can be pretty darn good, because this place is both long, it makes you think, it's got tricky greens, it kind of tests every part of you, so it's fun to be able to hang my hat on knowing that, for 4 days, at the very least, I kind of came out on top and beat the likes of Justin Rose and Rory McIlroy and Sergio Garcia. So that's a good feeling.
Get you out of here on this. Max Homa is our guest taking Dead Aim. I would be remiss if I didn't bring up what you have become, which is a legend, a legend on Twitter for chirping at people. How did that get started, and are you surprised at the masochistic nature of people sending you these videos of these horrendous swings?
Yeah, I can't believe how much punishment people like. But yeah, it blew up. Somebody actually presented the idea to me on Twitter. I think his name was Brandon. I'm not sure his last name, but he said that he thought it would be a good trend, so I give all the credit to him. I'm not sure how he called it, but yeah, I'm enjoying it. I've seen
how much have you blown up in terms of followers since you started doing that? It's got to be insane.
A lot, yeah. I don't know why people love it so much, but I'll keep doing it as long as they like.
Well, I'll just tell you what, playing in this media challenge in front of you for like the whole morning, all we could think of is, oh God, please don't let Homa
again.
Please don't let Homa get on us. We just can't have that.
You won again. You shine the brightest when the lights are on.
Spend just 5 minutes with Max Homa, and I got to spend a lot more than that in addition to that conversation we shared at a lunch table. You'll walk away going, he's one of my favorite golfers of all time. I'd also like to thank Tournament Director Gary Soba, University of North Carolina Head Men's Golf Coach Andrew DiBattista, and from the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, Ron Green Jr., for their time and insight this week as well. A reminder, if you're just catching the last little bit of the show, wondering what all we've covered today, no worries. Subscribe to the Taking Dead Aim podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, BPod Studios, Spotify, all the usual podcast outlets. It will automatically download to the device of your choice. Additionally, a great source of constant golf updates is our Facebook page. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Just search Taking Dead Aim. Featured there now, links to articles on the latest goings-on in and around the game. Weather-wise, Chamber of Commerce. Could spring finally be arriving? Maybe just a little early here in the Carolinas. Plenty of opportunity, especially with daylight savings. for teeing it up and letting this game continue to haunt your soul and break your heart. And if you do put a peg in the ground, remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep it in the short grass. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at @CLT_golf guy. And I'll see you right here next week, Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.